You're listening to Girovagando, the cycling podcast at the 2021 Giro d'Italia, powered by Super Sapiens, energy management for committed athletes and coaches. Today, we are in Verona.
Cozze ci tene, cozze vicine, non spigudeci cora, non spigudeci cora. Cozze ci tene, cozze vicine, non spigudeci cora, se lo mangiano le femmine.
L'arena, c'è anche Romeo e Giulietta, arriva il Giro d'Italia, van tutti in bicicletta, e la cronometro a squadre, che meraviglia, sembra che i corridori ballano la quadriglia.
Questa zona, ci siamo proprio nel cuore dell'area classica.
Sì, però noi siamo praticamente...
Noi siamo qui, ecco sì. Qua, noi siamo lì, Enoteca, eccola lì.
Ah, ho capito.
Siamo proprio lì dentro. Campo Le Calle,
Campo Ilacchium,
Campo Le Calle, Ilacchium è il nome dell'azienda scritto in latino.
Ah, ho capito.
Well, Daniel, what was that?
Well, Rich, first of all, we heard from an old friend who we haven't seen for a while and we would like to see in the next few days. Dino Zandegu, 1967 Tour of Flanders champion, one of the great characters of professional cycling, who has serenaded us in past Giri, including that a couple of years ago. He was singing about Verona. He was singing about a team time trial in Verona. You also heard him mention Romeo and Juliet in that lovely little...
That famous song about a team time trial in Verona.
Yes, but... Nonetheless, relevant because we were in Verona today. We did see the arena, as we heard Dino say there. And now, Rich, we're in Suave. As I said to someone yesterday, it was the wine stage a couple of days ago. But if you look hard, or not even that hard, every stage is a wine stage if you're on the cycling podcast. Suave, of course, famous for its white wine just outside Verona. Beautiful fortified town. We're in the sort of shadow of the castle and we're in a lovely Enoteca, and what you heard there was our waitress, our host for the early evening, explaining
just the early evening,
talking to me about the minerality of the soil just in the area to the west of Suave. And I'm sampling.
Well, she was pointing, we've got Matt beside us here.
Yes, so she was pointing out where exactly the white wine made from the Garganiga grape, as all white wines from Suave are. She was pointing out to me where it came from, and very nice it is too. Of course, Suave wine is often exported, well known in places like the UK. It's often very cheap. The worst stuff is exported, and the best stuff is kept here. It's actually quite a prestigious wine in Italy. Verona.
That's reassuring.
Verona produces a lot of wine. Produces more wine than any other province in Italy. Of course, you've got Valpolicella near here, you've got Amarone, you've got Bardolino, Suave.
Daniel, we were the two gentlemen of Verona today.
We were.
But we were supposed to be the three gentlemen of Verona this evening. And sadly, I got a phone call first thing this morning from Francois Tomaso, who was preparing to make his Giro debut. At last minute, unfortunately, he's not been able to come. So he left us this message.
Hi, Richard and Daniel. It's 4 o'clock here in Marseille, and I should be on a taxi to the airport, I suppose, to take my plane to Verona, where I was supposed to be meeting you rather late tonight for my first incursion on the Giro d'Italia. But unfortunately, as you know, and as I told you, and as you probably already warned everybody around, I won't be able to make it to the Giro. It's like kind of a Giro curse. I've got my Tour de France curse. That's, you know, the first, I've covered more than 30 and I've never seen a Frenchman win it. And my Giro curse is much simpler than that. I've never done it, and it was my first, and it won't happen. What happened actually before, people ask, and I thank you know, thank you for the attention. Yeah, it's a simple thing, family problem. My stepmother broke her hip, which happens with elderly people. She's in hospital, and we have to take care of her. And my father is 99 years old, and well, he's very valid. He's a great guy, a rock. But you know, when he's on his own, and I have to organize well, the what's next, which means that unfortunately, as much as I'll be watching the Giro with care and passion, I won't be able to discuss the race with you guys for this time. So yeah, it's very unfortunate. I'll miss the Zonkolan chairlift, which was probably would have been the highlight of my Giro, given that I'm afraid of heights and of bridges, as is now well known. I'll probably miss, yeah, our heated discussions with Daniel about French and Italian food. In a way, I'm kind of relieved, because I'm sure I would have loved everything, single meal and wine Daniel would have imposed on me, and I would have been forced to pretend it was crap. So here I am, still in Marseille, you know, glued to my lousy French food and terrible Marseille weather. Well, unfortunately, there are, as we all know, sometimes more serious, yeah, it's strange to say, but sometimes more serious things than cycling. And well, I'll be on the tour for sure, with you guys, and I really can guarantee, and I mean, real pledge I make on the podcast, and I make to myself, that next year I'll cover the entire Giro, so I will have plenty of time to drink terrible Italian wine, to eat terrible overcooked Italian pasta, and yeah, and many opportunities to call a few of the actions on the race bullshit. Well, all the best to you guys. Enjoy it without me. The good thing is you booked the hotels and the restaurants already, so well, probably you have you know, three portions of every meal instead of two you can share between you. So well, you know, all the best, and see you soon. Bye-bye.
So we're very sad that Francois won't be able to join us, but we've got him on the record there promising that he will cover the whole Giro next year.
And we think, more about this later, but we think we might have identified a replacement travelling companion.
Yeah.
Someone who has already been a travelling companion of sorts, have lost...
A travelling companion.
Of sorts, companion, comrade in adventure over the last 3 or 4 days, but we won't reveal exactly who that is until later
in the episode. No, we're going to hear a typically entertaining, twinkly-eyed interview.
Clue, it's not Chiron.
With this gentleman, another gentleman of Verona.
Very much a gentleman.
Well, we saw an incredible sprint. We expected a sprint today. It was a pan-flat stage. We expected a sprint today, and we got one. And I've just got the data for the winner, actually. Some interesting data here. The winner, he won today. Today's winner, Giacomo Nizzolo, won with 150 gigabytes per second. Yeah, he recorded
it
on
was
the finishing
fiber
sprint.
Optic Nizzolo, so-called because earlier in the year I did a Zoom interview with him, and I was absolutely wowed by the speed of his internet connection in Lugano, hence us christening him Fiber Optic Nizzolo. And it was his first stage win in the Giro after 11 second places today. And Rich, you said we
fastest
saw
fastest internet in the peloton, do you think?
Fastest internet in the peloton. And you said we saw it. We also heard the lead out, didn't we?
We did. And tonight is going to see the return of slow radio, because we were roadside at 2 kilometers to go when the bunch came tearing past. And it was a very impressive sound. This is a sort of noise of bike racing that we don't often hear unless you are roadside. It's visceral. It's, you know, there's lots of energy. It's one of the great underrated virtues of professional cycling, I think, the sound, the noise.
Rich. Trying to explain a noise. Oh, I know.
It's like dancing about architecture.
There we go.
So
we should just hear it without further ado.
Let it speak for itself. What, now? Okay.
Lovely, lovely.
That was the bunch going past at 75 kilometres an hour, as we learned later. We'll hear in an interview a bit later on. But it was quite awesome, wasn't it? You don't see a lot. If you're roadside watching the race at that point, you don't see an awful lot. But it's very, very impressive.
I saw you stroking your chin wistfully, thinking this is how fast I go on the lanes of on the farm tracks.
It's
of
not
Picardy.
Even how fast I go in my car, but it was an awesome display of power and a very impressive performance once again from Quebec at Assos. You know, when you think back to our Kilometre Zero at the Giro last year, NTT SOS, they seem to be on their way out. They really are reborn and rejuvenated this year. Second Giro stage win in 3 days. So it was stage 13 of the Giro from Ravenna to Verona, 198 kilometres. In Ravenna, we met up with Marina Romoli. We'll hear from her a bit later on. She runs a foundation, which is one of the good causes benefiting from the sales of Stacey Snyder's mugs and cups. So it was great to meet her there. And she's best friends with Giacomo Nizzolo. They grew up together and were on the national team together. So we'll hear from her on him as well. There was a breakaway. There was a breakaway.
It was
Daniel.
The usual suspects.
Samuele Rivi of Eolo. I will master this by the end of the Giro. Umberto Marengo of Bardiani and Simon Pello of Androni Giocattoli. They got a gap of up to 7:40.
We'd seen this film before, hadn't we?
And they did. It looked like they were going to stay away. Then Pello had a little go on his own with 120 kilometres to go. Not quite sure what that was about.
There was a bit of Pello fight there, wasn't there?
More
about
Pello,
more than
Pello
fight. More about Pello or Pello fights later.
The other two reeled them back in. And, well, for a while, it looked like the bunch was just keeping them at a safe distance, a minute and a half or so, to avoid catching them too soon. But with 50 kilometres to go, there was a bit of excitement. Remy Cavagna of De Koenig Quickstep and Peter Seri of De Koenig Quickstep stringing it out. And it looked like we were going to have another Belgians attack like we had at at Paris-Nice earlier in the year. But it didn't really come to anything, although it was a flurry of excitement. And in the end, well, Eduardo Affini, the Jumbo-Visma ruler, time trialist, big guy, isn't he? Big, powerful guy. He jumped very, very early. He's not a sprinter, but he went very, very early. Is this a sign of a lack of confidence in the sprinter, Dylan Groenewegen?
It could be. He's someone who has that in his locker, who has that sort of finisher's punch a kilometre or so from the finish. But, Rich, earlier in the day, we'd also seen Affini, because he's from Mantova, where the race went through Mantova with about 50 kilometres to go. He led the race of Mantova. Yeah, he wasn't quite a parent, the old visite parent, or whatever they call it in the tour.
He was holding up an umbrella so that everyone knew where he was.
He led the peloton over Mantova's beautiful Ponte San Giorgio out of the city. And there was another family visit as well. Davide Gaburro, the Bardiani rider, a bit closer to the finish. He's from a place called Bovolone. And I think it was a pretty nondescript stretch of road, I think very near there. He also gave I don't know whether his wife or his girlfriend or his family a wave, which was a nice moment.
Lovely. Well, Affini jumped, and he had quite a gap, and it looked like he might hold on. In fact, he did hold on for a second, but Giacomo Nizzolo, after a brilliant lead out from his team, they'd really controlled the last 10 kilometers or so. Nizzolo improvised. He jumped after Affini pretty early for him into his slipstream and kind of what do they call it, slingshot himself, and won quite convincingly.
Uploaded his first victory ever in the Giro d'Italia.
I'd say 150 gigabytes per second he recorded on that finishing streak. It was, after 11 second places in Grand Tour stage, it was his first win in a stage of a Grand Tour. It reminded me of Mark Cavendish's win into Brive in 2012, when Luis Leon Sanchez got away like that and looked like he might hold on, and Cavendish brilliantly rode the wheels and slingshotted himself up and passed Sanchez in the end. But yeah, Nizzolo, a popular win, I think, and obviously one that was celebrated by his team Quebec at Assos. Affini held on for second, Peter Sagan third, to strengthen his hold on the Ciclamino jersey. General classification, no changes, no change in the mountains. Competition, Geoffrey Bouchard is still leading that. So Nizzolo finally gets the win.
Also, Rich, we should mention, I mean, never mind Wi-Fi and internet connection, and Gaviria sprinted without a saddle, which is usually an essential item when you're racing your bike, isn't it? Extraordinary.
How did that... Do we know how that happened?
We are awaiting further information on that.
Still guessing on fueling? Not sure what or when to eat and drink on rides that matter? Never again. Optimize your fueling strategy with real-time glucose data, actionable insights, and personalized analytics. We're here to help you achieve your performance goals. Go to supersapiens.com for more on how to track your energy levels and fuel for success. The Cycling Podcast, powered by Super Sapiens.
Thanks very much indeed to our title sponsor, Super Sapiens. Very grateful to them for their support, allowing us to be here covering the Giro with our daily episodes and our morning episodes of Kilometre Zero. Cracking episode this morning, Daniel, remembering Alfredo Martini. A bit about Super Sapiens, and we'll hear another competition entrant in a moment, but Super Sapiens is a continuous glucose monitoring system that helps you make the right fueling choices, really revolutionising fueling for athletes. And by athletes, we mean everybody who does any kind of sport at all or who wants to be fit and healthy. Over time, the user can learn how best to manage their energy resources. It takes the guesswork out of when and what to eat. It works with the Abbott Libre Sense Glucose Sport Biosensor sticking to the back of the upper arm. A thin filament is inserted just under the skin to accurately measure glucose levels. That then sends real-time glucose data to the Super Sapiens app, and each biosensor patch lasts for 14 days. During this Giro, we're running a competition with Super Sapiens, allowing our listeners to try and win 3 months free supply of the biosensor patches. All you have to do is send in an audio or video message telling us how and why you would use Super Sapiens to help you achieve your cycling goal, whatever it happens to be. There are details on thecyclingpodcast.com about how to enter. But let's hear from one of those entrants who's actually applying on behalf of somebody else.
Hello, Cycling Podcast. This is a pitch for the Super Sapiens competition. Unlike many of the others that have applied, this isn't for me. I'm not looking for this for myself. I coach a young rider who suffers from ulcerative colitis, and that appears to affect his ability to recover, perform well, in so much that his performances can appear a bit binary at times. And I would be interested to use the data from a Super Sapiens sensor to try and correlate his good and not so good performances with the sort of glucose in his blood at that time, to try and get an idea of whether his gut and intestine is actually able to absorb the calories that he needs to fuel his performances. So that's my pitch. It's not for me. I'd just like to use the data to help another. Thank you.
Thanks very much for that, John. You can find out more about Super Sapiens at supersapiens.com. And if you want to enter the competition, go to thecyclingpodcast.com.
Well, Rich, bit of geography, bit of history, bit of culture. We started our day in Predappio, which is a beautiful little place. We weren't quite in Predappio, but we were in the environs of a beautiful place in the hills above Forlì in Emilia-Romagna, but famous, infamous as the birthplace of Benito Mussolini, the fascist leader in the Italian fascist leader in the early 20th century, and particularly the Second World War.
That's kind of mid-20th century, isn't it, really?
Yes, but he was, you know, he was very much in situ and influential before the Second World War. But interesting place. We didn't really get to look around, but it's where Mussolini's crypt still is. He's buried there. It's attracted neo-fascists, and there've been laws passed there to, or rules on the sale of neo-fascist memorabilia. Because, as I say, it's become a bit of a destination for people of that kind of inclination over the years. And we've talked about the politics of central Italy, that traditionally it was a very left-leaning area of Italy, but it started to swing slightly in 2019. Predappio elected its first sort of right-wing mayor for 70 years. And there's plans for a Mussolini museum, and it seems to, that kind of slightly, one might say, unsavory side of things is starting to creep back. But we didn't get a chance to have a look around, but quite an interesting place and a very beautiful place. We were on a winery, shock horror. Speaking of wine, the stage started in Ravenna, famous for its Byzantine architecture, but also famous as the burial site of Dante.
Byzantine or Byzantine?
Oh, God. It's a tough one, isn't it? Famous as the burial place of Dante. His tomb is there. He died there, was buried there in 1321. Dante, of course, the poet and the father of the modern Italian language, so he's known in Italy. But there's a link with Suave, where we are now, because the name Suave of the place, well, it means that the word Suave means kind of sort of gentle and soft and pleasant in Italian. Now, Dante once came here and he stayed in the castle under which, pretty much, we're recording this podcast. And he remarked on the wine that I'm drinking currently, and he supposedly remarked how suave, how gentle and how delicate and how beautiful it was. And there was a legend according to which that's where the town got its name. But apparently, like most things of this ilk, it's wrong. The name Suave came from the Swabians, who in the barbaric invasions between the first and the second and the fifth century AD invaded this kind of part of what is now Italy. So anyway, it could have been a good link. Suave also, there's also a cycling link. Suave was where the time trial in 1984, the very famous time trial that Francesco Moser won, and he won the Giro with that and crushed, well, stamped all over Laurent Fignon's dreams. The time trial started in Suave, finished in Verona.
Just we skirted around Bologna today, and it's famous for its politics too, the red city. But I saw that in your tweet earlier today, previewing the stage, that Verona is a right leaning city.
So
they're quite close together. So that's an obvious distinction between the two places.
Yeah, it is strange. And the football club, one of the football clubs in Verona, there are two major ones, Chievo and Hellas Verona. Hellas has always been a little bit of a I suppose a magnet, or seen as a magnet for right-wing sympathies, and it unfortunately has that reputation in Italy.
Well, we thought there might be a win for the local boy Radio Viviani today, because he was on home turf. He wasn't really anywhere close, unfortunately. It hasn't been clicking for Viviani really for the last 18 months or so. But Nizzolo, well, it has been clicking for him. He's just not got that win until today. And Daniel, at the finish, you intercepted a rider who was once being trumpeted as the next great German sprinting talent. He's a huge rider.
I thought he was going to be.
I'm sure it was being trumpeted by you, actually.
A lot of similarities between Max Walscheid and Marcel Kittel, both excellent time trialists who, by virtue of their enormous power output, also looked very promising as sprinters.
I think we took the initiative quite early. And we were always well placed. I brought Giacomo in the last kilometer. Unfortunately, I dropped my chain with 500 to go. So I had a little moment of freewheeling. Then he overtook me and found his own way. And I think did an amazing sprint.
I don't know how much you saw, and I don't know how much it was in the plan, but Affini went really early, and that almost helped Giacomo. I guess that wasn't the plan, was it?
No, of course not. But he's an extremely clever sprinter. So probably when he started the sprint, he saw already that he might get a little draft while it's going early. And I think that was a perfect plan.
And it looks super fast. I don't know if you guys had a tailwind there, but does that also suit your train and suit Giacomo?
I think for me specifically, it was a perfect final because I can push a lot of power on a really high speed. I already at 75k an hour in the lead out, so it was extremely fast sprint. Giacomo sprinted on a 56 chain ring, and I think also that and believing to be able to push that chain ring was also part of the victory.
And the second stage win in a few days, just tell me, how much has confidence contributed to this?
I must say, I think I was never that happy about someone else winning, and I think as a team we are extremely happy with the Giro. We did very well, and today it was even more a team effort than a win of Mauro Schmidt. So today we can really celebrate it together.
Well, that was Giacomo Nizzolo's lead out man, Max Walscheid, talking about quite an unusual sprint in the end, wasn't it? With Affini really sort of breaking, parting the waters, I suppose, for the various sprinters and their trains. And Nizzolo was the first to react, and it was so fast. I mean, we saw them at 2 kilometers to go, and they continued really on the same road, and there was a tailwind. And we heard Valstrad there talk about the speed, 75 kilometers an hour. I actually thought it would suit Sagan, but it was not to be. But two stage wins now for Quebeca Assos. We remarked on this a few months ago, or 2 or 3 months ago. They've not necessarily won a lot this year, but I think they've raced in a very sort of prominent and quite impressive and spirited way. And they've sort of underlined to me, and I said this again a few weeks ago, that we do tend to evaluate teams based on the number of victories they claim in every season. We kind of assume that it's a bit of a crisis if they're not winning, but Quebeca Assos have been refreshing this year to me, in that they've forced me to reevaluate that, because I think they have been one of the more sort of enterprising teams in the peloton this year. And I think I just get the sense that with these two victories, what could have been a sort of beaten down, you know, mentality, mindset of, you know, we're not winning, is starting to, whether that ever was in place in the team, but I think that can very quickly turn into an underdog mentality and a very positive energy. And I get the sense that's what's happening at
they really are
giant killers.
Yeah, they've come full circle, because they started off as underdogs. They won Milan Sanremo, they went to the Tour de France MTN Quebeca and won at least one stage there with Steve Cummings, didn't they? A very famous stage at Mond. And they thrived on that underdog status. And then they kind of joined the big boys. You know, they got a big sponsor, Dimension Data, then NTT. They signed Mark Cavendish. They signed other stars. And really, that didn't work for them at all. They had Bjarne Riis in charge last year as well. And it just, none of that worked for them at all. Whereas they've gone back to being underdogs.
They've become scrappers, haven't they?
They're world tour, but they've got the lowest budget in the world tour. They've cobbled together a team. They lost a lot of their high earners at the end of last year, of course. Michael Valgren, Ed Valbosenhagen, riders like that left. And yet, they're doing better. They've been riding well all season. I mean, we heard the other day, in kilometer zero, Michael Gogol, okay, he was sixth on the day at Strade Bianche, but it was a fantastic performance. He overperformed that day, and that's been the thing.
That's become the overperformance theme, rather than underperformance. Yeah. And it was notable how grateful Nizzolo was to his teammates, and how effusive in his praise of the team and everything they've done. Because, you know, he is the talisman now, from having been a sort of, I wouldn't say a second tier sprinter, but a one of many leading sprinters in the World Tour. He suddenly found himself as bearing a lot of responsibility for one team, and he has risen to the occasion. You know, he hasn't necessarily won a lot of races, but he's been consistent, and he stuck at it. Today it was interesting as well. He talked about how he'd been boxed in quite a few times in this Giro already, and he'd got his positioning wrong. And today his absolute priority was to just have clear road ahead of him. And, you know, the finish suited him in the sense that
Affini's attack suited him.
Suited him. And he said that he was willing to get a little bit more wind in his face today if it meant definitely not getting boxed in. He had to risk losing in order to win, and that's ultimately what happened.
The Cycling Podcast at the 2021 Giro d'Italia is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thanks very much indeed to Science in Sport, our longtime sponsor. If you want 25% off all your Science in Sport products, go to scienceandsport.com and at the checkout, enter the code SISCP25. A reminder too that if you'd like to guess Sunday's stage winner and being with the chance of winning £80 worth of Science Sport goodies, go to thecyclingpodcast.com and predict the winner of Sunday's stage. That's a competition that's running for each of the Sunday stages throughout the Giro. But yes, thanks once again to Science and Sport.
Rich, should we talk candidates for replacing Francois for the last week? I mean, who's in the shake-up?
Well, who's someone who combines his sense of calm, his knowledge, his experience.
I think we need an older head. Yeah,
he appreciates his food and his wine.
We definitely need a bon vivant.
He doesn't tolerate bullshit, does he?
Certainly not. Who could fit the bill?
Oh, who could it be?
I wonder. Well, I'll tell you what. This morning in the mix zone, I did happen upon Patrick Lefevre for the first time today, because we've seen him. Well, we've seen him every day for the last few days.
He's sometimes following us around
in our hotel.
Can't shake him off.
Yes, he's always ready with a sort of friendly salute or a wink or a nudge or a glass of wine. And yes, he was in the mix zone holding court, as he often is at the moment. And I asked him, well, I spoke to him about Remco Evenepoel's travails on the White Rose in Tuscany, and also João Almeida's role in that, in the stage that finished in Montalcino, which has been discussed and criticised and was certainly scrutinised.
We knew that this was the could be the pain in the ass, this stage, because last year he did the race in Italy, and there was only three pieces of this gravel, and he lost 6 minutes. So don't forget that 5 years ago this guy was not even a rider but a football player. And then if you have the basic formation like Bernal from mountain bike, he has a historical retardo on these guys, but we will try to work on it this winter and to try to learn them to handle better the bike. You cannot reduce the expectations. The expectations are made by the people, by the fans, by the press, and I see it, and I think my sponsors are glad with it, so I'm relaxed.
Patrick, do you know anything yet about the special help you might get for Remco? I heard rumours about Cal Crutchlow being involved.
Well, he's a fan of the team. He's know very well Mark Cavendish and Tom Bonan, and probably in an off period will try to ask his help.
As far as you're concerned, it's a technical problem. It's not mental scar tissue from the crash last year.
No, because he did, before the crash last year, he did a kind of this race in Oika or something like this, and he lost 6 minutes and three pieces of gravel. He even couldn't stay on a bike, and next day he won with 3 minutes. So it's, don't forget this kid where 5 years ago he was a football player. So,
and last thing, Patrick, how have you assessed Almeida's performance for Remco in the last few days? Because a few people watched him on the Strade Bianca stage and they said he wasn't helping Remco enough. What did you think?
But unfortunately for João, he lost his 5-6 minutes in the first mountain stage. Otherwise, I think he could go for his own classification. But we agreed already before the Giro, the guy who will be in lead will be protected. And that is what it is. Of course, if tomorrow or Monday Remco lose 30 minutes, 3-0 minutes, then of course João will have carte blanche. So you have to be in the front. And he was aware of the problems that Remco had. Remco was yelling on the radio, and even the car was too far away. And then before he noticed, he stopped immediately and helped him. And of course, the Portuguese press said that he was not happy. And he said also to me, I had diamond legs, I could be in the front. Yes, of course. But his classification was lost already. And the breakaway, they couldn't catch it anymore. So what it serves to be fifth or to help your leader? I think you have to help your leader then. I was very clear with this before the Giro already. I said to the guys of Flemish Television, yesterday they were fighting in the room, but that's not. But we need some suspense, huh? Because the Giro is boring.
So I didn't pop the question to Patrick, you know, whether he would like to join us for the next 10 days or so. We've got hotel bookings in the kind of establishment that he would probably approve of. There are a few more wineries in there.
Have you managed to cancel any of them, actually, Daniel? Did you get onto that today?
We will get onto that in due course, Richard.
Right. It's certainly a suggestion. But I think he was flying out of Verona tonight. So
but a lot
might be too late.
A lot,
Patrick, come back.
A lot to ponder in.
I mean,
that
would be novel. Well,
a lot to ponder in that interview.
Yeah, he enjoys it, doesn't he? The cut and thrust of the interview in the mix zone. He's got a twinkle in his eye. I mean, he doesn't like it when his team's been beaten, and he's not a good loser at all. But there's something about him here where his team is, if you're being blunt, is kind of underperforming a little bit, maybe. Certainly not. I mean, James Knox recently was telling us how this is the first race he's ever been to with the kind of Quickstep where they've not had a sprinter. And that has really changed the way that they've ridden and raced. You know, they haven't looked like winning a stage yet. That could all change, of course. And Evenepoel is still, he's still there. He's still got a chance of getting on the podium. But it's a strange situation for them to be in.
Yes, and really interesting on Remco's problems the other day. And we certainly weren't aware of what an issue this was. I mean, Lefebvre, he referenced there what he called a historical ritardo slipping into Italian, basically meaning that Remco has not been riding, not been racing for very long, so he doesn't have the experience in terms of bike handling. There was a rumour this morning that De Koninck Quickstep were so concerned about Remco's bike handling problems that they were going to call on some help from outside of cycling, from MotoGP, in fact. A good friend of Mark Cavendish, who of course rides for De Koninck Quickstep, Cal Crutchlow, the MotoGP rider, he was potentially being lined up to help Remco. As Patrick, well, I put the question to Patrick in the interview there, and he confirmed that. Well, we didn't know at the time, but we have since discovered from an extremely good source, who is not Mark Cavendish, I hasten to add, is that they already tried last year to hook or to link Cal Crutchlow and Remco Evenepoel up to do some work on his descending, and they were not able to do that because of COVID restrictions, quarantine arrangements, but it was on the cards a few months ago.
What's interesting about this though, Daniel, is that even admitting that there's a problem, because Evenepoel himself, and I've noticed you're lurching into calling him Remco rather than Evenepoel, which is interesting. That is quite common with him. I thought I was Patrick Lefebvre for a moment. That guy, a gentleman in a navy blue tank top, which is what he wears, with a shock of white hair, just walked down the street. It wasn't him. But we've seen, I mean, Evenepoel himself has played down any problems that he might have with bike handling and so on. And we've seen in the past, notably with Thibaut Pinot, that when a rider gets a name for himself as being a nervous descender or something, it creates a lot of problems for him, because if the others perceive that as a weakness, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. It can become one. And it's not something that will necessarily work in Evenepoel's favour over the coming years. And it'll be hard for him to shake off.
Yeah, certainly, Rich. A few of the highlights from that.
Yes, I know. What can he do to shake it off? Do a wheelie through the... ride Strada Bianca next year and just pull a wheelie going through the first section of gravel. And then what do they call it?
Endo. Maybe Peter Sagan will join the team, which is, you know, it's a rumour that's definitely going around.
Well, and after Patrick Lefebvre's dinner the other night with the Slovakians.
Well, there you go. And it's gaining a bit of momentum. Maybe Peter Sagan will be able to, you know, team up with Cal Crutchlow to give Remco some lessons in whatever he needs. Other highlights from that interview with Patrick Lefebvre, who, as always, has a great turn of phrase. Almeida had diamond legs the other day in Siena. This got me thinking, what are the best expressions to convey precisely that? You know, we've had the no chain before with US Postal, and I think that was coined by George Hincapie. Maybe we should invite, ask for some listener suggestions on that. What sort of phraseology do you use? When the buffaloes, you know, when your hooves are really moving smoothly, what do you call that?
It's so long since that happened that I can't remember the terminology. I think we're going to have to ask
for help
here.
Can't remember the feeling. And then the image of Remco and Almeida fighting in their room. Patrick orchestrating a pillow fight.
Well, while we're on the subject of the Koenig Quickstep, so we'll hear from our audio diarist, James Knox. Quiet day in the office for him.
Stage 13, done without any issues. Whole bunch can thank me for throwing salt over my shoulders all yesterday. So, but yeah, hectic finish, but no problems. Actually, pretty calm finish, what am I talking about? A lot of people just got out of the way, to be honest. Which makes everything easier for the guys that need to be there. I was in a group of, quite a big group, 40 guys maybe, cruising in. Yeah, and that was it really. Quite quick, thankfully. We had mainly cross-tail, from Ravenna to Verona on the flatlands of the Po Valley. We crossed the Po a few times, I think. We had a couple of bridges to deal with. We had a few towns to get through. And we had a little group of riders joining together, having a hit out after one of the intermediate sprints, which got quickly shut down. And on that, it was a, yeah, it was a parade, to be honest. I averaged 102 beats per minute was my average heart rate for the race, 198 kilometers. I had a good chat, worked on the tan lines. Yeah, caught up with quite a few people talking about this and that. People talking about the weather coming up. People talking about the stages being, general chit chat. But yeah, as a team, all good. Remco up front, out of trouble. And for the rest of us, just a really long, extended rest day, really. Kept the legs turning over. Don't have a sprinter. Remy was one of those riders that had a little dig. Nice finish into Verona. After the line, I stopped and watched the finish and looked to be a pretty impressive attack from Affini. Almost cancelled it to the line. I'm not sure actually when he attacked, but I'm saw him with a little gap coming into that 500 metres to go last straight. So that would have been, yeah, that would have been pretty spectacular if he'd won in that fashion. I think he's also pretty local to Verona. Yeah, maybe like Mantova, Padova, or however you say it, one of them, Padova, somewhere around there. So yeah, I think he, from the region. So yeah, that would have been pretty cool. But instead, Nizzolo got his first Giro win, which I guess is well-earned. Tomorrow's the Zonkolan. That'll be my first time going to the Zonkolan, but I believe it's the easier side. So can't be able to say, you know, I've done the full Zonkolan. Weather isn't looking great, which is a bit of a shame. Apparently we'll be cold and wet on top, so we'll see how it goes.
That was James Knox. Daniel, average heart rate for the stage of 102. I think mine was probably higher, being a passenger in the car.
I've misplaced my heart rate monitor charger somewhere in the last week, so mine's out of action, unfortunately.
Disaster. What else do we have from today? Well, I said that we met Marina Romoli at the start this morning. She got in touch with us this morning to say she was at the start because, well, she lives in Le Marche, and we thought we might see her down there, but we didn't. It was terrible weather down there, so she was there, but it was all a bit frantic. She was at the start today, partly to see her great friend, Giacomo Nizzolo, and wish him luck. And I met her and I spoke to her. Her foundation, I mean, she was a very promising bike rider who was unfortunately hit by a vehicle some years ago and left paralyzed. So she's in a wheelchair now, but she's really dedicated her life to raising money for research into spinal injuries and paralysis and funding research projects, also helping athletes whose careers have been ended by those types of injuries or indeed brain injuries as well. And she's raised a lot of money. One of our listeners nominated her foundation to receive money as one of the good causes to receive money from the sale of Stacey Snyder's mugs, cups and cappuccino sets. And incidentally, another batch of these are going to go on sale, and we'll have details of exactly when in tomorrow night's podcast. But I met Marina this morning and spoke to her, and here's what she said. Well, here, first of all, our interview this morning, and then we'll hear a little message she sent after the finish about her great friend Nizzolo's victory. Marina, tell us a bit. Tell us your story. You're here at the Giro today, but you were a very good cyclist yourself, weren't you?
Yes, I was a former pro cycling rider, and I raced for 14 years in my career, and I was vice campionessa del mondo. I do second in a world championship when I'm a junior, when I'm 18. So, but in 2010, I survived after a big cycling crash. A car cut my road, and I suffered from a spinal cord injury. And now I'm on a wheelchair. But the world of cycling always stay with me and help me to go for. And after this accident, I grew up a foundation. And this foundation is Maria Romoli Onlus. And we raised money for find a cure for paralysis, because it's a big problem for all young people under 30 years. So we try to do this, and we have just founded so many research projects all over the world. And now we are here at the Giro, and I met you, friends, for the cycling podcast. And I want to say thank you for what you do for the cycling and for what you do for our foundation.
How old were you when you had the accident?
22. Yes, it's 1 week before my birthday. So it was a hard period for me. I passed 1 year at the hospital for rehabilitation. Now I live my life independently, but it was really hard to do this this journey.
I mean, the listener of ours who nominated your foundation to receive money from the sale of Stacey Snyder's mugs, cups and bowls, said that you have become a great ambassador, that you travel a lot to speak, obviously not at the moment in the time of COVID, but has that been a big part of your life the last decade or so, has been traveling and speaking and meeting people?
Yes, I passed my 10 years after my accident doing this, and now I'm also a psychologist. I studied, and I want to give you this important message that it's don't give up the fight, keep going, and because if you can dream it, you can do it. So I say before I say I saw that it's important to have a big family around me, and this family is the sports and the cycling, and all my friends that were in my teams and with me in the national teams, Italian national teams. So thank you to everyone that support me and support my causes.
I'm really happy for the victory of Giacomo Nizzolo in today's stage, because we were friends since we were young cycling rider. We raced together in Italian national teams, and we are also friends outside the cycling. And he also supported Marino Romoli Onlus since we founded it. And I can say you that he has a big passion, that is road and off-road motorbikes. And I can say you that this morning, before the start of the stage, he said, today I won't make second.
Well, that was Marina Romoli on Il Mastino, the Bull Mastiff. Giacomo Nizzolo told us in his press conference tonight that his dad has always called him the Bull Mastiff. I think it's a Bull Mastiff, Il Mastino. It's a kind of bulldog thing. I'm not a dog person. I wouldn't know the difference between a bulldog and a French bulldog, and I'm not. Yeah. Anyway, he's got tattoos. He's got a number of tattoos. I think on his right arm, a horse. It's his favourite animal, apparently.
What's your favourite animal?
Motorbike.
Daniel.
I quite like snow leopards.
That would look good as a tattoo.
I like snow leopards. He's got motorbike, because that's another one of his passions.
Well, we heard that from Marina there. Yeah, she's a big motorbike fan.
And he's got a collage of other things he didn't really want to explain, didn't really want to go into, because they're quite private. Tomorrow, Richard, we are heading to Lo Zoncolan.
Yes. A stage a couple years ago, we're going a different way up this time, aren't we? The easier way up. While you were interviewing Max Walshide at the finish, Daniel, I was witness to a touching little scene between two of the GC candidates. Hugh Carthy and Simon Yates kind of rolled into the paddock together, and they'd obviously been chatting, and as they peeled off, Yates, overheard him say, and this is an exclusive to the Cycling Podcast, "See you tomorrow, mate."
Similarly, I saw Hugh Carthy this morning and asked him how his legs were, and he said, "Yeah, right.
Diamonds in them, mate."
No, he didn't say that. He's not from Birmingham either.
Sorry, that
but
wasn't
we're going
it from
to,
me.
We're going to the Zoncolan tomorrow, and it's going to be wet, apparently. We're expecting bad weather. But Rich, inevitably, when we go to Lo Zoncolan, and particularly that side of Lo Zoncolan, we think of the 2003 Giro when Gilberto Simoni won. It was one of Marco Pantani's sort of last tangos in that Giro. That was his last Giro, and he was actually pretty good that day. I think he finished second on the stage. But when we go to Lo Zoncolan, we also think about a little town at the bottom called Tolmezzo, which is the birthplace, actually, of the Androni rider Nicola Vinciaruti, who I spoke to today, but more of that over the weekend. But Tolmezzo, the birthplace also of...
Tiramisu. What,
possibly, not confirmed. We will revisit. Let's revisit, just indulge us for a few seconds, Rich. The Tiramisu World Cup when it was Treviso against Tolmezzo. Lionel and I, a couple of years ago, we were trying to establish who it was that actually invented tiramisu. Treviso's got claims on it. Tolmezzo's got claims on it. Unless this is the second leg when we visited Tolmezzo and the establishment, the hotel, which claims to have invented tiramisu. Napalm, where are we now?
Well, we're in Tolmezzo, and I'm just wondering which of these cafes here is the home of the losing tiramisu makers.
Well, tension's building, isn't it? We're about to... Well, the second half's about to kick off. We think that Treviso and Le Beccherie has got about a 3-goal lead. However, we've been talking to some members of the Tolmezzo team, and they're talking a good game. We've been speaking to the barman, the hotel receptionist, and they're pretty confident they can overturn this disadvantage. So we better go and taste it, and also find out what these claims that they invented tiramisu and not Le Beccherie in Treviso are based on.
The thing is, what's more prestigious, the World Cup or the Cycling Podcast Award?
Well, that was my first day on the Giro 2018. It was the Giro that started in Israel, so I'd covered the Grande Partenza.
You were in a great mood that day, weren't you?
I'd flown back out for what was, you know, shaping up to be a cracking race. Simon Yates had been flying. Chris Froome was beginning to show signs of recovery. It was tantalising. It was mouth-watering. Unlike the tiramisu, which for you and Lionel seemed to replace lunch, which I couldn't really get my head around.
Yeah.
But as the action was, the riders were reaching the Zoncolan, we're tucking into tiramisu somewhere.
Yeah,
nearby.
Which wasn't ideal because, I mean, even on this year, I'm suffering from my art because we have an ongoing series of Twitter posts that I'm not sure anyone is really paying attention to, whereby I post every morning, or we post, a picture of where we're staying, or from where we're staying, or near where we're staying, and a slice of crostata, which is a staple of Italian breakfast. I don't eat crostata. I don't really eat sweet stuff in general, but I'm having to order crostata every morning, and I'm having to take a picture of it, and then having to eat it because I don't like wasting food. I think it's kind of immoral
this is very needy stuff from Daniel here, and a plea, really, a cry for help. Please, if you see this tweet going in the morning, please
maybe
give
Patrick
it a like.
Will eat my crostata.
Give it a like. Give it a retweet. Respond to it in some way, please.
Do you think Patrick might polish off my crostata when he joins us tomorrow?
I think he might well do. Yeah, definitely. He's joining us tomorrow, is he?
Wow.
You never
What's
know.
This space?
It'd be a bit odd, wouldn't it, to have Lefebvre with us? We'd be a bit compromising.
We'd have a tremendous time.
A little bit compromising. Anyway, should we wrap things up for tonight, Daniel? Any other business from today before tomorrow's?
No, I think we're about to head further into the bowels of Suave and maybe enjoy some more of the local produce.
Well, listen, another theme of this Giro has been our incompetence when it comes to Flemish names, and we're delighted to play out tonight with our good friend Charlotte Elton. Daniel, you and I know Charlotte from London. She's from Belgium originally. She now lives in Brussels, and she's been helping us out with our Flemish pronunciation, along with Hugo Kurowitz, of course. And she's sent us this handy song, which really will prove invaluable to us over the coming days. Thank you, Charlotte.
Okay, here goes. Tom Bonne Wout van Aert, Kobe Hulsen's not that hard, Lawrence Nassen's Evenepoel, Flemish pronunciation fools. Tom Steele's Kampenaert, Ilio Kese, come on lads, Dries de Bont, Keukeleire, Roger de Vlaming and Lefebvre, Vermeers en de Buist, Seb van Marke en Museeuw, Steuven en Van Avermaet, Kobe Hulsen's not so bad, Vervake Bakkelands, De Gent is an easy one, Axel Merckx, Eddy Merckx, trouble with the accents. You didn't say it right. That's what all the flambos say every single day. You didn't say it right, but you can keep on calling Hugo when you need some help. All right, good luck. Ciao.